As you remember, the board did approve the Farrell Avenue pathway project after the budget was adopted back in June. I'll go to the next slide. So what we're proposing is to actually establish a capital outlay budget. That's line item 9006 in the Parks and Rec budget, and move and put a budget of $60,000 for that project in. We've incurred more expenses related to permitting and the time it has taken to run the permit through the county process. Also included are the services, Wallace Group services to package this. It's ready for bid, to go out to bid, and that we did have to spend some money from this budget to move a fence to so the alignment of the pathway would be more straight shot than it was would have been before. So I'll go to the next slide. The Parks and Rec reserve account does have about $280,000. And this is something we could look at in our next budget on how to get the reserves back up after spending the expenditures. If you go back just for a second, if you wouldn't mind, Laura. As you can see, there'll be a deficit of a little over $17,000, and that the revenue of that $52,000 was from Zone A property tax money that the board allocated to this budget. So with that, any questions? With that,
I don't have a question,
yes.
but I really do love your tables. They make it really clear. So thank you for that.
Oh yes, for me, the words, some people get good information from reading words and some from tables. My brain works in tables.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
I
like that.
like to just add, Chris, that when we saw this at the FAC meeting, I thought that it was very, very easy to read and easy to understand the proposed changes here.
Yeah, that's so great. All right. Shall we open it for public comment?
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial star nine. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. All right, Julie, you just have to unmute yourself.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker. And you lost me on the increase to Fund 900 related to the Farrell Trail. I have been skeptical of this project for a long time, but when it was $40,000, I asked your board to do a cost-benefit analysis to see if it's really worth it and how many people actually benefit from it. Certainly that has not been done, and the price is climbing. This is just too much. So I'd ask, maybe you go ahead and approve this, but bring it back to a agenda and let's have a full vetting of the project, all the costs. And again, I think the cost benefit just is not there. You know, when I was a kid, I went to school at Sunnyside and I walked to school and I walked through that trail, and I'm here to tell you, I survived. And children don't go to Sunnyside School anymore. So the path really doesn't get used by as many people as it did when that school was open. It just seems to me that, you know, there's a park close by. That's just not, it's just not a good way to spend the money. This money has a long history. I think maybe you need to get a refresher course on how that money got in that fund, because there really isn't a way to replenish it. But for the recent moving of a certain percentage of the property tax. So, I just don't want to see it frittered away. And we never did get reimbursed for the wood chip project that was mishandled in recent past. So thank you very much.
There's no other public comment at this time.
Okay, bringing it back to the board, any further discussion or comments?
This is Chuck.
Go ahead.
You know, I don't remember how many years ago the wood chip caper occurred, but at the time it was our intent to, and the county didn't really say no to the fact that we intended to come to them at the point where it would have been the scheduled replacement for the material that they had there. And we'd ask for reimbursement for the cost that we put out for that. And that might be worth thinking about. The Trail to Farrell, it was kind of interesting that Julie kind of made a case for doing something there. School kids walk into other parts of town, even though that school is not in use at the time, it is used by the community. There's different things going on there. The skate park is an attraction that wasn't there before. The park is in that direction. I drove down that street today by coincidence and looked at the short little path that connects a couple of neighborhoods. And that's the kind of thing that we need to encourage. We do have a lot of dirt trails and roads around here, but there are a couple of key links in that neighborhood there that aren't in place. There's some fencing that keeps you from walking through the middle of town there. And so I think this is a good project. I wasn't sure in the beginning, and I do kind of support it now. And those are my thoughts.
Thanks, Chuck. Any other comments?
Yeah, Chris, I'd like to piggyback on what Chuck was saying about the Farrell Street path. I've been going out there 3 times a week to water some trees that were planted by a nonprofit. And I see the amount of people that are actually using that pathway, because I'm out there for about an hour a day. But there's a significant amount of people that use that going through there, walking to connect, you know, through the neighborhood, et cetera. So I was surprised to see actually how many people are using it, but you can see just by looking at the path, you know, how many people are wandering through there. You know, the price may come in a little different when it actually, you know, goes out to bid, but I think it's important to have that pedestrian and bicycle link between the communities. So I totally agree with what Chuck was saying regarding that. So I'll be prepared to make a motion if we're at that point.
Any other comments, or shall we let Marshall make a motion?
Just one other thing. There was a comment made that this fund may not have replenishment except through the Zone A property tax, that kind of thing. We haven't really come to decisions about what to do with that. We kind of annually decide, unless we're going to decide to permanently dedicate all of it in one direction or another, this is the kind of thing that it should be going to. And as needs arise, it's nice to have that little bit of a fund that isn't dedicated to one thing or another. So make your motion, Marshall.
Okay. I'll go ahead and move that the board approve the mid-year adjustment request as presented for funds 100, 200, 301, 500, 600, 800, and 900.
I'll second that.
All right. Excellent. May I have a roll call vote?
Director Ohulski.
Yes.
Vice President Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
Director Gatchel.
Yes.
President Womack.
Yes. Excellent. All right. Brown Act training. Marshall's busy this month.
I'm excited.
Yeah, you've already
now.
Seen it once, Chris. So.
Oh, I love it. Let's see it again.
There you go. Okay, so as a requirement, we have to do the Brown Act training every year. So I've been doing it for a while for the committees and for the board. As we go through it, you're going to see there's two parts to this, and I just want to make that clear up front. there's the Basic Brown Act that's going to be the basis of this. And then there was an executive order and a law passed last year that have impacts on the how the Brown Act is actually implemented during the COVID period, such as not having to have in-person meetings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to run through the Brown Act as it's currently stated or as it was stated, and then I'll bring up the executive order changes that allowed the remote meetings. And then at the very end, I'm going to bring up the part about what was changed about social media last year. So there will be a short quiz at the end, so make sure you're taking notes. You have to pass this quiz. Those of you who have seen this before, it's the exact same quiz, so hopefully you'll get it unanimously correct. Okay, so the purpose of the Brown Act is that it establishes the procedural framework for members of local governmental decision-making bodies to openly meet, debate, and act. It provides the means for the public to be informed about the views, discussions, and actions of its locally elected and appointed governmental representatives. So the overview here is the governmental officials are elected by the people, represent the people, and govern on behalf of the people. That's the critical component. Secondly, the public needs to have the ability to observe, monitor, and evaluate the elected representatives, which is us. And then finally, the Brown Act is designed to encourage public participation in local government. I added my Abraham Lincoln slide back in, Chris, you'll see. So Abraham Lincoln back in 1863 said, government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And I think that's the overriding concern or the overriding thing that's addressed in the Brown Act.
I like it.
So the history, it was introduced by Modesto Assemblyman Ralph M. Brown more than 50 years ago. And the legislature has frequently added to the requirements of the act over the years. And again, they did make significant changes last year. And the requirements are detailed, comprehensive, and complex. And this was the legislature's intent that's expressed in Government Code Section 54950. The Brown Act embodies the philosophy that the public agencies exist for the purpose of conducting public business, and the public has the right to know how its quote unquote collaborative decisions are being made. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. Okay, so the major intent is openness. All meetings of governmental bodies which discuss, deliberate, and act on public business must be fully open and accessible to the public. Exceptions to the rule of openness are few and far between. Now, as we get into this part, again, I'm gonna give you the basic law and then I'll go into the changes as we get to the end here. Okay, people subject to the Brown Act are all governing boards of local governmental agencies, which is what the CSD board is. The advisory and standing subcommittees created by such governing boards, which is why I give the presentation to our committees, and all boards, committees, and bodies created by federal or state law. Okay, this again, I'm gonna keep repeating this, so don't get mad at me, but this again is the basic thing, and this was changed because of the COVID situation. But a meeting is any gathering of a majority of the board members at the same time and place that involves any aspect of the decision-making process. The exceptions to that are conferences, training, workshops, community forums, and meetings of other governmental bodies. So if you attend the Board of Supervisors, for example, social or ceremonial occasions. Within these exceptions, board members must avoid talking about any applicable business while they are at such events. Okay, again, this has been waived due to COVID, but the Brown Act basic says locations of meetings, a majority of the board members must meet within the boundaries or jurisdictional area of the governmental entity with only specific exceptions, including the inspection of real property, or meeting with federal state officials to discuss legislative or regulatory issues. So the exceptions there are probably not really applicable to our board, but they are in the law. If a board member participates by teleconferencing, the location of that board member is calling from must be noticed with an agenda posted and accessible to the public. Again, this has been changed because of the COVID. Prohibited activities. Any use of direct communication, personal intermediaries, or technological devices that is employed by a majority of the board members to develop a collective concurrence as to the action to be taken on an item is prohibited. And I did add in this one the technological devices because that's part of the last year's law. A serial or daisy chain meeting is a series, that's where the word serial comes from, of meetings to develop a consensus, with each meeting involving less than a majority of the board members, but taken together involve a majority of the board members. So one person talks to another person who talks to another person, talks to another person, and there's a daisy chain or a serial meeting, so, and you develop a consensus, that's prohibited. And then a hub and spoke meeting, which is when one board member acts as a contact point for all the other board members and communicates to each of them the other board member's position in order to reach a consensus. Again, a prohibited activity. Okay, use of email. Again, this will be addressed under the social media changes. Board members cannot use email to develop a collective consensus, agreement, or decision, or exchange information in email about their views or positions on public business. There are, this particular part hasn't changed, but when we get to talk about social media, you'll see the impacts of how this is now being addressed. Okay, noticing requirements. Again, this is for regular board meetings, must be posted in an accessible location 72 hours in advance and mailed to all those who request the notice. And then special board meetings may be called by posting a notice and an agenda at least 24 hours in advance. Okay, the agenda requirements are pretty straightforward. They must contain a brief description of every item to be discussed. Don't need to have to go into amount of detail in the agenda. That's the purpose of the staff report. And then the descriptions must be clear enough to be understood by members of the public. So people who haven't been intimately involved in the process need to be able to understand exactly what the item is and what's before the board. And there must include a time for public comment. Okay, the public rights. The members of the public have the right to address the board members on both agenda and non-agenda items, which is why on our agendas, you'll see that item that talks about public comment on items not on the agenda, and be accommodated if they're disabled so they can access and participate in the meeting. And finally, as already mentioned, receive copies of written materials distributed to the board members, except privileged items, litigation and real estate transactional negotiations, et cetera. Okay, now here's the two significant impacts on the Brown Act. First of all is Executive Order N2920. And as it says here, in order to implement public health officials' recommendation to slow the spread of the COVID, Governor Newsom issued Executive Order N2920 on March 17th, 2020, over a year ago, which relaxes some of the Brown Act's public meeting requirements. It doesn't waive them, but it just relaxes them during the COVID period that are not practical in light of the current pandemic crisis. And then in continuation, N2920 allows local legislative or state bodies to hold public meetings via teleconference without having to provide a physical location from which members of the public may observe the meeting and offer public comment. As long as members of the public are allowed to observe and address the meeting telephonically or otherwise electronically, subject to specified notice and accessibility requirements that we've already talked about. Okay, now last year on September 18th, 2020, Assembly Bill 992 was signed into law by Governor Newsom. AB 992 modernizes the Brown Act's provisions concerning serial meetings by addressing the use of social media by members of a board. So this is an update to address the prevalent use of social media. Okay, AB 992 clarifies that it ordinarily does not violate the Brown Act to participate in social media. So that's a critical sentence right there. It ordinarily does not violate the Brown Act to participate in social media. Interestingly, at least in my opinion, AB 992 specifically allows the use of digital icons, i.e. emojis, which you can see I've included one there, in discussions on social media. And that is the means that a lot of people use to express their opinion. But okay, Laura. So, however, AB 992 also creates a bright line rule that members of a board may not respond directly to any communications posted on the internet by other members regarding a matter within its jurisdiction. So Twitter, Instagram, whatever you're talking about, Facebook, you may not respond directly to any communications posted on the internet by other members regarding a matter within our jurisdiction. This means that a member of a legislative body, which is our board, may post a smiley face emoji in response to a constituent's Facebook post, but may not post a thumbs up, for example, emoji, if the post is from a fellow board member. Before you go on, Laura, I just want to make this crystal clear. So you can post an emoji in response to a constituent's social media post, but you can't do that if it's from a fellow member of the board. This is a critical component here. So I just want that to be clear. If it's a member of the board, then that's considered a serial meeting. And if it's a member of the public, you can do that.
So the distinction
is
not—
Can I ask a question?
Yep. Yeah, go ahead. I have one too.
So does it, does it matter though? Like, can you give a thumbs up to the, constituent? Are you just not supposed to use the thumbs up?
You can do it for a constituent.
And then can you use a smiley face for members of the board?
No emojis for a member of the board. This is an example.
You can post
anything you want in response to a constituent social media, but you cannot post anything if the post from a fellow board member. I'm sorry.
Okay, I didn't know if the thumbs up kind of represented a vote. So I just wanted to clarify that it wasn't a particular emoji.
Yeah, basically the thumbs up is saying you support that position. So and then the other board members would see it and they'd know what your position is on that, which then would create a serial chain meeting.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Chuck?
My comment was going to be the exact same thing. It does one emoji, you're not giving weight to one or the other. I don't want to have to.
No. The smiley, the thumbs up,
then
or
maybe use consistent emojis, which would make the difference being the constituents versus a fellow board member.
Right.
I just picked
the smiley face and the thumbs up as examples.
Well, I would use the same emoji, just so that we know that it's how you respond to who, and it's not which emoji you're using.
Okay, I'm sorry for that, but yes, that's the clarification. It's just you can't use it. You can use it for a constituent, but you can't use it for a member of the board.
There are just too many emojis to have to learn which ones to use.
I know, I'm sorry. I was just using these as examples. I tried to be a little creative in my presentation.
Yeah, so I like that. But it's like, maybe it's like, if it said you may not use emojis as opposed
I'll clarify that before I take it to the rest
thumbs
up. Yeah, I'll clarify that before I take it to the rest of the committees.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Enforcement. There's civil remedies. Compliance with the Brown Act can be enforced by a civil lawsuit. A court can declare actions void that are not in compliance with the act, if not cured. So what that means is if somebody files a complaint, you do have the opportunity to cure it. And the district can be liable for legal costs and attorney's fees of any litigation. Now comes the true-false quiz. So we'll run through these one by one and ask you guys as we're going along the answers. We're not going to go through the whole thing and grade it at the end. So, okay, first of all, a meeting as defined in the Brown Act occurs only when some action is taken. True or false?
False,
yeah. Isn't it when you post an agenda?
It's when more than two are in attendance, yes.
Okay.
So it is false. Okay, board members may poll each other by social media on any issues which may come before the board. And we just talked about this, so hopefully you'll know the answer to this one.
Only with the appropriate emoji.
All right.
False.
All right, we're good there. Okay, a discussion between two board members of a five-member board is considered a meeting under the Brown Act if the board members discuss district business. Again, a discussion between two board members.
I say false.
False, so long as that two stays right at two.
Yep, that is correct. That doesn't constitute it. When you get to three of five, then you're violating the Brown Act. Okay, this one I didn't discuss, but you should know this. The board may take a vote by secret ballot in open session.
It's true.
I think it's true because I think we have done that.
Anybody else want to weigh in?
I believe that's true.
Well, you can go ahead and vote for officers, for example, by secret ballot, but who voted for who has to be announced. So you can't just say, okay, this action was approved 5-0. You'd have to say this action was approved, you know, by X, Y, and Z. So you can take a written ballot, but it has to be publicly disclosed. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Any person may record an open meeting of the board via audio or video recordings.
True.
It's true.
Yep. True.
That is true. Okay, a member of the public may address the board at a regular meeting on any items of interest to the public, provided the matter is within the jurisdiction of the district.
That's true.
True.
Yep, that's the part of the agenda where you can talk on specific items or for public comment on items not on the agenda. So that is true. Okay, two more and then we're done here. Board chair may limit the amount of time members of the public are allowed to speak on matters of public interest. Board chair, what do you think?
Yes.
Everybody agree with Chris or any dissension? Okay, yes, that is correct.
We already do that, so
yep.
Self-evident, yep. Right?
Yeah, okay, this last one applies to the Brown Act, not with the COVID allowances. So I just want to put this question in context. The board may hold its meetings at any location it chooses within the county, provided the public is notified.
I think that's false. Don't you have to be within your district?
Yep, it has to be within our jurisdiction, correct.
Yeah, okay. Otherwise, you know, let's go hang out in Shandon.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, come on, Hawaii.
I was going to say,
I'm not a big thinker.
Yeah. I could pick better places. All right. So, in conclusion, board members are representative of the people who are entrusted to advise on governmental affairs. The Brown Act is for the benefit of the public that the board members represent, and the Brown Act must be taken seriously. Failure to do so can result not only in legal penalties, but a loss of public trust. And with that, I am concluding this and thank you for the clarification questions regarding social media. And if anybody has any additional questions, I'm available.
I would just comment on the social media piece. I have been seeing on Nextdoor public comments around Los Osos development and water issues. So those are probably things you don't want to be commenting on and following this act, correct?
Yes, correct. Good comment, yes.
Okay. All right, thank you, Marshall.
Okay. Excellent. Yes, thank you, Marshall.
Well, I got a couple cleanup items there, but I'll be giving this many more times. So those of you that are chairs of the committees, you'll see me again.
I'm excited.
Yes. Well, I think it is good. It's just a little clarification.
It is.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Marshall, do I need to take public comment on this?
I guess.
Because it's an item on the agenda?
It's a presentation. I don't, I would assume so, but Jeff might want to weigh in on that. I mean, there'd be no harm in taking public comment.
Is Jeff available?
I apologize. This
comment?
Is Jeff.
Oh, okay.
Having issues. I would say certainly take public comment.
Okay, let's take a public comment on Brown Act training.
If you'd like to make a public comment, star 9 if you're on your phone or raise your hand. There's no public comment. Thank you.
All right. Okay, let's. Oh, thanks, Marshall. That was excellent.
Thank you.
Let's open up public comment again for items not on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, star 9. If you're on your computer, please raise your hand. All right, call in. You are able to speak with a 916 area code.
Hi, good evening.
Hello.
My name is Jacqueline Monsoor. I work for the SLO County Air Pollution Control District, and I'm here today to let you know about some special grant funding available to businesses and public agencies in your jurisdiction through the Community Air Protection Program. The Community Air Protection Program focuses on reducing air pollution in low-income areas as defined by the state. In our county, that includes downtown Paso Robles, parts of San Luis Obispo, Morro Bay, the Los Osos and Baywood area, and Oceano. So projects within these areas will have funding priority. This year, we have a lot of money to put to work in cleaning our air. We have grants for new tractors and farm equipment, school and transit buses, and electric vehicle charging stations. Good projects to consider would be electric vehicle charging stations accessible to the public in public parking lots, charging stations for businesses that have frequent public traffic or multiple fleet vehicles that could become electric, or charging stations for low-income multifamily residents. At a minimum, a business could receive an EV charger grant for at least half of equipment and installation costs. We have successfully granted and worked with several businesses and organizations here in SLO County, including Cuesta and Cal Poly, hotels in Pismo and Paso Robles, school districts, transit agencies, the city of Morro Bay, and the city of San Luis. Applications for the Community Air Protection Program will be accepted January 18th through March 15th. We are hoping the civic leaders of our county will share this opportunity with their constituents and point them to the Community Air Protection Program webpage on the slowcleanair.org website, or pass along my contact information. Again, my name is Jacqueline Monsoor, and you can reach me at 805-781-5912. Thank you.
There's no other public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll take it back to the board. Does anyone want to comment on public comment?
I wish we owned our own facility where we could think about putting in a charging station. I suppose there are some out here in town. I'm not even aware of that.
Nope, there aren't any that I know of. There's some in Morro Bay at the,
right.
But it's there. Yeah. Like, I guess we don't. Yeah. We have to own the land, right?
Well, it would be a lot easier. I mean, and certainly a bigger parking lot that drew more traffic would be where to start. But I think this is, it would be nice to somehow be able to be a part of this.
Yeah, and I think maybe at the South Bay Community Center in the parking lot.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's a potential
good location. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. That's county, though.
Yeah, it's county.
And the other place that would...
That community center is not county. The parking lot is county.
Right.
The building itself is privately owned by the community, but the parking lot is the county's, and that might... I'll follow up and see if there's any way that we can be involved in something like that.
Yeah, well, and that ties back to, you know, taking the rubber things out of the playground area, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We did that on their property and they allowed us to do it, so I can't imagine why they would oppose this, but I think it's a good point, Chuck, and I think that's a good starting location.
I think that is. The Red Barn is there. Yeah. People come there. That parking lot's used a lot. Okay.
Yep. Good.
Another good place would be like in the Miners Starbucks parking lot,
commercial,
where you charge and shop.
Right.
Yeah, but that would be totally a private entity, whereas I was thinking a public entity based on what Chuck said.
But you can let them know that
sound
like the businesses could get a 50% grant fund. So if we let them know that it's available.
I know them, obviously. So I'm going to pass that word on to the owner of that property.
So I'm wondering if it would be revenue generating.
I have no idea how these things work. And that's why I said I'll volunteer to kind of investigate just what the program is about and how we might be able to take advantage of it and get some of this going out here in town. I mean, we're supposed to have electric vehicles in the state, in 20 years, 15 years? We're talking about total fleet changeover, so something's got to happen soon.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Jacqueline, for bringing that to our attention. And I took down your number, so I guess Chuck can call.
Appreciate that.
Okay, administrative and committee reports.
Chris, I want to mention that somebody from the Sheriff Department is here to give a report.
Excellent. Let's hear from the sheriff.
You just have to unmute yourself. It is *6. It shows that you're unmuted, but I'm not hearing anything.
Okay, sorry about that.
Oh, perfect. We can hear you now.
Okay, thanks. Again, this is Sergeant Chris Langston calling from the San Luis Sheriff's Office, and I just have some community statistics to share with you guys. So I will be I'll be talking about the time frame of January to February 4th of 2021, specifically for the Los Osos area. We had one assault battery call, which did not result in any significant injury, basically just two males throwing swings at each other. We had 5 disturbance calls, which can be categorized as noise complaints or disturbances of the peace, kind of generally. We had 4 burglary calls, which include unlocked vehicles as well as unsecured items in the property. We did not have any that included an actual forced entry into a house. We had 5 theft calls, which were just minor items stolen out of unlocked vehicles or unsecured items. We had 1 vandalism call, 2 mail theft calls. We had 3 phone scam calls. Those are categorized as citizens calling in just to notify us of the scam calls that we all get where people are trying to get you to give up your bank account info or buy gift cards, et cetera. We had 5 suspicious circumstances calls, and those are calls for service that don't necessarily equate to a crime but are concerning to citizens, so we respond and investigate those. The deputies made 63 self-initiated traffic enforcement stops, in Los Osos for that month. And we had 29 preventative patrol activity calls, and that would be the deputies being proactive and going to known crime locations or issues that reoccur in Los Osos to prevent crime from occurring. And that's all the stats I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Excellent. Do we have any questions? Thank you so much.
I guess I missed what the time frame for that report was, because we have a written report, which is beautiful for a change. And those numbers seem to kind of go along with that in terms of the scope of things. I'm really glad that we don't have more assault and batteries and burglaries and that kind of thing. Disturbances are much more preferred. But what was the time frame for that?
This was January 1st, 2021 to February 4th, 2021.
There you go. Okay, that extra week or so in there. That was the difference. Okay. Thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate you giving a report over the phone too. It's nice to hear you instead of just reading the report.
So yes, and I'm sorry. I was having some cell phone issues. I was out in the field on a call, so I was going to do this over my cell phone. So sorry about the inconvenience there.
Oh, no, it's working great. So. All right. And I'm guessing the next one is the general manager report.
Yes, thank you. As I typically try to do, I wanted to circle back just real quickly on the utilities department report on the updates. We talked a little bit in the mid-year adjustment presentation about some of these projects, but the big one I wanted to highlight for the board and the community is the 16th Street tank inspections that were completed and the subsequent report we received and then cost estimates based on the report. That both we have a north and south tank, the two tanks, both are in need of full rehab, which means interior and exterior. There are some extreme rust problems, both on the interior roofs of both tanks and on the exterior of both tanks. And the estimated cost to repair those for both tanks would be somewhere in the tune to $500,000 to $600,000. We are looking at moving forward at least with one rehab in the next fiscal year and then scheduling the second tank in a subsequent year. So that's kind of the big one. We wanted to make sure it was on the radar. Just real quick on the 10th Street well, we had it back and running. We were having electrical issues that we thought might be storm related. Turned out it wasn't storm related and it had to do with a component in the controls. We have those replaced and we're still having some problems, but we're expecting to get that back up and running full time next week. I know it's been a long, long process, but we're so close. With that, I'll move on to my general manager's report. Just a few items here. Just wanted to say our annual financial audit, which we had a presentation on back in January, is finally completed. All the filing of the audit with state agencies and other outside agencies has been completed. So we're glad to have completed that successful audit. I always want to take the opportunity when it arises to thank our water crew. Of course, the storm event we had on January 27th and 28th was quite an event. It could have been worse in terms of flooding. There was our usual isolated flooding issues around town, but a lot of it goes to our crew that did a lot of prep in front of the storm to ensure drains were cleared, debris was cleared, the basins were ready to receive the water. So I just want to thank them, and plus, they did do some rounds inspecting some of the areas that are actually county maintained, but are problem spots, just to make sure drains were cleared to help preventing any storm damage if we could. So I want to thank them. Otherwise, we do have our SLOSIA Memorandum of Understanding, which is our contract with our employees, is expiring on June 30th, and we will be entering into negotiations soon. Hopefully I'll have that back to the board for consideration by May, so we could have it part of our budget process. With that, I can answer any questions.
Ron, this is Chuck. Thanks to the crew. That was quite a rain event. And when you think back about how OSLOS used to submerge during those kind of events, many years ago, the 6th and 8th Street El Moro problems, and there was Lake Napomo for a while. We held up pretty well through that. So yes, thanks to the crews. 10th Street, do we need to go kill a couple chickens, do an exorcism or something there? One thing after another. Thank you for hanging tough with that.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's tough.
A test of patience. I keep telling Nate, our crew leader, this is our true test of patience. We'll get through
it. We're going through the whole gamut there. One thing, though, I want to end with a good, solid note that I've noticed in the production and runtime hours with our wells, that South Bay Lower, the project that we just completed, it seemed like, I was just noticing that the runtime hours, this were 2020 versus 2019, not a whole lot, 708 versus 720. So we ran a little bit more in time and almost doubled the production from 2019.
And that was the reason we did that project.
Yes.
I think I described where that well was pumping into the pressure zone, which is towards the tanks, the 16th Street tanks. And so the head pressure wasn't allowing the flow to go, we couldn't pump as much flow into that because of the head pressure. So now that it's feeding to the gravity, we've been able to increase the gallons per minute on that well. Plus, it's boosted our firefighting capabilities with higher pressure in the gravity zone. Very successful.
Yeah, I just want to call attention to that. Sort of a little throw-off project. You know, it's not a new well. It's not something that seemed big, but it had been on my mind just watching those numbers and that production, and I'm glad to see the results. Thank you.
And just real quick,
That's a nice observation.
Yeah, just real quick, once we get 10th Street back up, you've probably been noticing the runtime on Palisades coming down.
Yes.
Once 10th Street is up, that is going to be, that Palisades will come way down. So that's why we're anxious to get it up here soon, because we are in the lower demand period, but we're rapidly moving towards spring and summer.
Yeah, having 3rd Street back online and then eventually 8th Street improvements, We're handling our challenges, and I'm really happy to see that we're just in good fiscal shape to keep handling whatever's thrown at us, 10th Street particularly.
Yeah, and this is Marshall. I wanted to piggyback on Chuck. I think having the 3rd Street well back on production obviously is a major item at this point, especially given the problems with the 10th Street well. So I want to thank staff for all their work and efforts to get that well back online.
Yes.
All right. Good observation, Chuck, too. All right. So I did the LOCAC report. I guess I didn't. The deadline was the day after LOCAC, and I don't think I got my written report in on time. But one of the things, let's see. Let me read what I have. Okay, so Supervisor Gibson started with a recognition for the Unhoused Residents Community Forum that LOCAC did earlier this month. It was very informative. He said it was a priority for the Board of Supervisors to deal with a lot of the debt related to unpaid rents. He says the county has $24 million in unpaid rents, and they want to support both tenants and the landlords. And the board approved stronger advocacy for eviction protections. The Chamber of Commerce is having a virtual installation dinner right now. They're honoring Quick Tech as Business of the Year, Christina Grimm as Volunteer of the Year, and Jim Questenberry as Citizen of the Year. We will be having elections for LOCAC, and we should have applications, and the dates, the deadlines should be ready at the next meeting, which should be February 25th. And the consent agenda items were we approved a deck extension for a single family residence and a conditional use permit for Morrow Shores Mobile Home Park to add 10 new prefabricated manufactured homes. So that's all I have for the LOCAC report.
Chris, this is Marshall. I just want to make one clarification about the chamber since I'm the past president of that. I know we're having virtual because we can't do our annual dinner, but Jim Quisenberry is Citizen of the Year, but that is not a chamber award. That's a separate group.
Oh, okay. Thanks for the clarification.
I just know being a former Citizen of the Year, I do know that they just want to make sure that it's clarification that that is a separate entity, not part of the chamber.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Are there any other questions or comments?
Chris, this is Chuck. Relating back to the homelessness forum that LOCAC sponsored, that was a pretty interesting night. Obviously, we mm-hmm. have a growing issue here as well as all the communities in the county. I don't know where the Community Services District has a role in all this. Obviously, we don't have really any kind of legislative authority, I don't think, under the LAFCO charter, but it's a problem here. And so I know the county tried a safe parking lot at the library that seems to have not gone well, depending on who you ask. There's been a growing problem there on Palisades. It may be that a safe parking lot in this community is something that's needed in the future. Churches tried outside of town. Neighbors didn't like it, took baseball bats to windows. It's a contentious issue, but maybe we need to think about where our role in this might be at some point. We do have Zone A property tax money. I don't know if something in the future comes down. I'm just saying that's something we maybe in the back of our minds need to keep. And this is my Capslow board member talking. How do we all engage to address this issue? And that's about all I want to say for now.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I was surprised at how many unhoused families we have that have kids in school. And it, I think a big answer would be some inexpensive housing. But we are worried about our water supplies, but it seems like we need to balance that somehow. People being able to have a home and take a shower. I mean, they're here already, but I don't know what the answer to that is either.
Oh, there's no easy answer. I'm just saying as a board, let's be prepared to think about it. That was just a powerful night. And hearing how other communities are much more engaged, maybe it had to be. They have larger populations. I don't, you know, I mean, you've got Echo, you've got South County, Forte Prado. There's a lot of places around, but not much out here on the coast. And it's just something that's not going to go away. So I'm really thankful to LOCAC for hosting that.
Yes, they did a great job.
Yes, they did.
Okay, any other reports? Do we have any director's announcements? Okay. I think this is where I got lost last time. Let's see. Does anyone want to?
I do have
a. Do we take a public comment?
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I do have an announcement. Stephanie Danini is going to help with the Emergency Services Committee. She's my neighbor and she's in the CAL FIRE department as well.
Oh, so okay. Excellent.
She'll be
Thank
part
you.
Of the first meeting. So.
All right. She can enjoy the Brown Act report. Okay.
Chris, make sure you ask if any director would like to pull something from the consent agenda.
Okay, I was trying to figure if I do that or if there, okay. Would anyone like to pull anything from the consent agenda? All right, moving. And so now we take public comment for.
Please.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay. All right. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Chris, I'll make a motion to receive and file the committee administrative reports and approve the consent agenda.
Excellent. Thank you. Do I have a... All right, Matthew seconds. Do we take a roll call vote?
Yes, please. Director
Roll call vote, please. Yep, thank you.
Director Ohulski?
Yes.
Vice President Forcroy?
Yes.
Director Sesenia?
Yes.
Director Gatchell?
Yes.
President Womack?
Yes. All right. Does anyone on the board have any future agenda items?
I think other than the items that were already discussed, I'm fine.
Okay. Ron, if I want to look into refinancing our I bond, do I put that on the agenda?
I think yes, that could be, it depends where we're at in the process. If we're just proposing, like I think right now, the research on refinancing that debt to iBank, we could just do that through committee. But if we were actually going to take an action to do the paperwork, that would go to the board.
Oh, okay. Then I will leave that for later because I'm just looking at it. Yeah. Do any of the board have closing comments?
Can't wait to get to a real meeting again and see everyone.
I also look forward to that.
I think we all look forward to that, no pun intended.
Yeah. Nice picture in the paper, Troy.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yes. All right. I think I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Chris.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Night.
Night.
Night.